Today is the first Sunday in Advent. We've lit the first candle of the season, the candle of hope. But as the implications of the national election sink in, at least for me, it's difficult to speak about hope. And I realized this morning, as all the visitors were introduced, that this sermon is one spoken to our community. And if you come with a very different view of the national election, I hope you will see it not as an argument, but as a window to who we are as a community. We're entering a period of political and spiritual darkness. Now, there's been a lot of talk about the political darkness, but about the spiritual darkness, not so much. And there are good reasons for that. First, while most of us have disagreed strongly with Mr. Trump, he was elected in a democratic process that reflects the genuine pain and loss experienced by so many Americans. And they've expressed their sincerely held beliefs clearly. Second, there's a proper separation in our country between church and state. While we're free to speak about politics from the pulpit, we need to be most careful about advocating from the pulpit against a person or a particular party. And there's a good spiritual reason for that, too. While we can speak against the policies a politician advocates, we can't presume to know his heart. Third, at least for me, I'm afraid of being Chicken Little. The sky is falling. The sky is falling. In the last decades, at least, I have wondered several times whether the sky was falling. How do I know that this will be as bad as I think it will be? Well, I don't, for sure. Despite these considerable objections, we're in an unprecedented period, at least in my lifetime. For many people, undocumented refugees, for instance, the sky is falling, or will be. The church, in its role as church, must speak out. We'll see what Mr. Trump actually does as president, but taken together with it, with his campaign speeches, his words and actions as president-elect are reason enough. We must recognize and name the spiritual darkness of our time. So why celebrate this Advent? Advent is also a season of cold and darkness, a time of waiting, a time when the promise of Jesus' birth seems much more fragile than usual. It's a time to not shy away from how cold and dark it actually is, to truly experience the joy of the coming Christmas. We're invited to acknowledge the sin of the world that Jesus will take away. Today's lectionary scriptures also speak of a promise of a future kingdom, but they speak from amidst a present darkness. It's how it will be at the fulfillment of that process. From Isaiah, in days to come, the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established as the highest of the mountains, and shall be raised above the hills. All the nations shall stream to it. They shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nations shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. Notice that these verses are not the description of the present reality. Rather, they're the promise of the future. You have to go on to the following verses in the Bible to understand the context in which this is spoken, which is a time of current darkness. Starting with verse 6, they have forsaken the ways of your people, O house of Jacob. Their land is filled with silver and gold, and there is no end to their treasures. Their land is filled with horses, and there is no end to their chariots. And their land is filled with idols. They bow down to the works of their hands, to what their own fingers have made. So the people are humbled, and everyone is brought low. Do not forgive them. So the glory of the day in which swords are beaten into plowshares is really a promise given during an ugly time of greed and idolatry. The fulfillment of that promise must have looked pretty unlikely at that time. In Romans, there's a similar movement. The promise, the day of our salvation, is near. But for now, let us live in the current reality, not reveling in the darkness, not in debauchery and licentiousness, not in quarreling and jealousy. Now, given that this letter was written about 25 years after the crucifixion of Jesus, that promise must have felt pretty fragile to the letter's recipients. There may have been a promise, but there was no guarantee, and in the usual sense, no fulfillment for them either. Each of these promises of salvation is made in the darkness and requires a period of waiting, a period of uncertainty and more darkness. Nevertheless, people live in hope because these are God's promises. So what does it mean to live in a time of darkness like this? Gail Boss is a good friend from way back when we were in the Potter's House together. She was here a couple of weeks ago to speak about her new book, All Creation Waits. Gail lives in Michigan, and the book is a series of Advent meditations on how animals of the North deal with the cold and darkness. The reflections seem to me appropriate for this period in the life in our country. This one is about the chickadees who come to the feeder outside Gail's window. Every cold night, those cheery birds walked a tightrope between life and death to greet us the next morning. Half an ounce of feather, flesh, and bones. A chickadee in your palm would feel like two nickels. Like any living thing, lightweight relative to its length and width, it loses heat quickly. So the little bird must eat continually during the winter's short daylight hours to stoke its metabolic fires for the long night to come. Even so, on a below zero night, the fires can go out. Even tucked into the shelter of a tree, even with the ability to drop its temperature substantially to save energy, a chickadee on a winter night burns through all the calories it ate during the day. Before dawn, as soon as there's light enough, the chickadee flutters out famished, its brain intent on seeds. Tiny its brain, but bigger now in Advent than in spring. Since late summer, he's been collecting seeds, and his bird's memory center has been growing, adding neurons to record the location of every seed in the cache. Thousands of them. As he eats them up through the rest of the winter, the map in his brain will shrink. Will the seed map be gone before the ice and snow is? Will he see another spring? That remains an open question for the chickadee. We must keep on working too, doing what there is to do, relying on the seeds of the spirit that we've stored before, eating from the bird feeder that is this community. But we also need to recognize the danger of the cold. For many of us, some more than others, this season marks the beginning of a cold an uncertain time. The church's liturgical year, of which Advent is the first Sunday, is marked by its own ups and downs, joy and suffering. Christmas and Epiphany are the celebration of Christ's birth and baptism. Lent marks a period of reflection and penitence. Good Friday is the low point of the year, and then the glorious celebration of Easter, and so on, throughout the year. In our culture, however, as individuals, we're allowed to have our ups and downs, but that's personal. Time itself isn't supposed to have its ups and downs, peaks and valleys. Time is supposed to be homogeneous, undifferentiated. We're an officially optimistic people. It's always time to go shopping. It's always a time to feel good. There's no good time for despair. Even a person who mourns the death of a loved one for too long is embarrassing. Put on a happy face is the mantra. The liturgical year, however, allows for a collective experience of the ups and downs. Joy and suffering, confession and restitution. Advent is the collective experience of darkness and waiting. It reminds us that we're in this together as people, as a community. Advent is the collective experience of darkness. It invites us to experience this time and not to deflect it. Don't get to Christmas too early, it says. You don't need to begin Christmas carols right after Thanksgiving. You can allow yourself the uncertainty. And this is where the hope that first candle comes in. Here in this particular Advent, we will live in a deeper darkness and cold than usual. Given the mood of the country, fascism is just as likely as recovery to true democracy. But hope is not real unless its fulfillment is uncertain. What do we have to hope in? Will our Christmas present be the Electoral College overturning the election result? Will it be a resolution of our fears for the future, or a sense that, well, it's not that bad? No, I suspect that none of us expects God's promise to turn out that way. So what is the promise of God for us? In his book, Lighten Our Darkness, Douglas John Hall reminds us that God does not promise to dispel the darkness completely. God promises to give us a candle to guide us through the darkness with hope. This is the promise of Advent, the light in our darkness. Unlike our usual conception of God, God lives within the darkness too, and with us in that darkness. Even there, we will find God's relentless love, unconditional forgiveness, and commitment to violence. God still invites us into the strength and beauty of community. God promises us that though the arc of the moral universe may be long, it bends toward justice. In fact, no person has ever had the guarantee that this is going to turn out all right. Maybe this time it will, but in my lifetime, probably not. Now, living on those promises from within that darkness may sound like pretty thin hope. What? That's it? A prescription for love, forgiveness, and nonviolence? What's the power of that against the power of racism, the evil of xenophobia, the mental instability of a person with such power? But yeah, that's it. In the darkness of Advent, God calls us to a life of faith in Christ's birth. We may find it easier to feel that faith later next month when we celebrate Christ's birth. But that thin hope is what we're given now in this time of darkness. The faith to act out of relentless love, to offer unconditional forgiveness to those who see things differently, to make sacrifices for others, to commit ourselves to nonviolence in word as well as in deed. To keep ourselves rooted in our community. In a time like this, such hope is not, to say the least, easy. But it's what we've got, and it's what we're called to. None of this, of course, denies the importance of action, of activism in this time of waiting. The faith that we're given in this dark time is not a call to passivity or quietism. Some of us will intensify our activism. Others will sit to pray in the darkness to gather strength and wisdom for what comes next. But whether in activism or in prayer, Advent reminds us that each must be bathed in love, forgiveness, and nonviolence, sacrifice. Our faith serves to remind us that although his policies may be evil, Mr. Trump is not. He's no more, no less sinful than I. To demonize him or his supporters as the source of the evil is to ignore the awesome power of the principalities and powers of this world, who may co-opt us at any time, any of us. We burn the candle of hope, and hope is always born of uncertainty. A promise does not need hope unless there is uncertainty. Now, in this time after election, in this time of darkness, we're given the assurance that God's light will illuminate some small part of our darkness. Things may yet get much worse. There are no guarantees. But the promise, the hope, this community will still be here. Amen.